Okay, so we're up to Pasuk Samach Vav. Okay, yesterday we learned to the total number. The total number was 42,330 and 37, right? No, I'm making a mistake. That was none of that. That was the total number. That number was not given. 42,360 was the total number of Jews that ascended, and that included, that was, besides, okay, going back to Samach Dalit, Kol HaKol Ke'echad, Arba Ribo was 40,000 plus Alpayim, 2,000 Shloshim, right, 42,360.
Where is this? I'm trying
Pasuk Samach Dalit, Perek Beis. He'll show you Perek Beis Pasuk Samach Dalet, and then we mentioned that there were slaves. How many slaves were there? There were 7,337. Okay, that simply, I think, if I'm not mistaken, there's a disagreement among the Mefarshim if that's included in the 42,360, or that's in addition. I think it simply means in addition, because only counting those that are actually Jewish. The slaves do not have a full status of a Jew, even though they're chayv to observe mitzvos like Noshim. And then we learned yesterday, there were singers, male singers and female singers, 200, which accompanied the Jewish people as they made their way back to Eretz Yisrael to provide entertainment to enhance their simcha, the incredible simcha of coming back to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And now Pasuk Samach Vav, we also enumerate all the different types of animals. Susehem, their horses, Shiva Meos Shloshim Shisha, 736, Pir Dehem Mules, Mosayim 200, Arbom Chamisha 245, Gimalehem Camels, Arba Meos 400, Shloshim Chamisha 435, and Donkeys, Chamerim Sheshes Alofim 6,000, Shiva Meos Vestrim 6,720. So we have here a whole list of their animals, four different types of animals, horses, donkeys, camels, and horses, mules, camels, and donkeys. And then Pasuk Samaches, Umirasheho Avos Bevoim Leves Hashem Asher B'Yushalayim, and those that were the leaders, the heads of the families, when they came, Leves Hashem, to the house of Hashem Asher B'Yushalayim, as they actually returned to the Beis HaMikdash, Hisnadvu Leves Olekim, they gave donations from their private funds. So there was a very large collection, made all different types of collections, gifts that were given by Koresh. There were gifts that were given by the people who lived in Persia, Babel, that entire region, that were the Koresh commanded everyone should give donations. And then there were gifts that there were things that were returned besides additional gifts, new money that was provided by Koresh. The Koresh actually returned the Kalim and property that belonged to Klal Yisrael from the time of the Kibush 70 years ago, from the time of Nebuchadnezzar. And now we have a new donations, people, the Jewish people who obviously were very successful, we know about that, during this 52-year period in Bavel, they were very wealthy, some of them at least, and they gave their own private gifts. Pasuk concludes, it's not v'lebeis holakim lahamido al mechano. They provided, they were generous, they gave gifts to the Beis Holakim lahamido to establish it al mechano upon its foundation. There's a medrash in Rus. In Rus, when Naomi leaves with Elimelech, so the Pasuk just says, Vayelech ish. He left. Well, let me read you the entire, at least part of the Medrash. The Medrash is contrasting the return of Klal Yisrael here in the time of Ezra to Elimelech leaving Eretz Yisrael during the time of famine. So we can be certain that when Elimelech, in the time there was a very great famine during the time of the Shoftim, the story of Rus took place during the time of the Shoftim, there was a very great famine, and Elimelech was a very wealthy, successful person, and he figured he could no longer make a parnasa, and he left Beis Lechem Yehuda, he went to Moab. And Chazal are very critical, why did you leave? And in fact, they point out that Elimelech, he left, and everyone, because he thought he couldn't survive, he thought he would die, he would starve to death, he left, and yet everyone survived. This hometown, Beis Lechem Yehuda, they all survived, but Elimelech, who left, he didn't survive, and he lost everything. And when Rus came back, when Naomi came back with the Rus, years later, they came back as paupers. So you never know. The schus of living in Eretz Yisrael, even though it's extremely difficult, what?
Yeah, another reason. That he didn't want everybody to be
dependent. He wanted to support everyone on him. Because he was so wealthy, he didn't want to have to support the whole Tzibur, so he left. But look what happened. They survived. They did very well. And he's the one that turned into a pauper. He died. His two sons died. And his daughter-in-law came back with his wife, penniless, paupers. They had to go and take the gleanings from the fields. So the Medrash contrasts the departure of Elimelech with the 42,360 Jews who returned during the time of Ezra. When Elimelech left, he certainly left with great wealth. Certainly. Yet there's no record of it. All it says, Vayelech Elimelech. Let me read you the Medrash. Amar Rabbi Avoh, Bo re'e kama chibib hakosav biyosa shal Eretz Yisrael, yoyser mitziyos. Look how the pasuk, how precious it is to make aliyah, to ascend to Eretz Yisrael, and how the pasuk, in contrast to leaving Eretz Yisrael. It's a very good drasha. I'm reading a Medrash. You don't have this. This is a Medrash. It's a very good drasha for nefesh b'nefesh. When you come to Eretz Yisrael, ksiv, sherei nemar, it says here, when they came up, it even records the number of their horses and their camels, their mules and their donkeys. I'm reading the Medrash. The Medrash, but there, Hossam, when Elimelech left, all it says is Vayelech Ish, a man left, and we can be certain when he left with enormous wealth, and that's why he left. And yet, there is no record because that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is proud of. Over here, they came. But Baram bought Hossam when Elimelech left. Doesn't say anything about their possessions. All it says is Vayelech Ish. Beautiful medrash contrast. Leaving Eretz Yisrael verse coming to Eretz Yisrael. Even little things have chashivas in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm now up to Pasuk Samach Tes. Okay, we're up to Pasuk Samach Tes. Samach Tes. What?
Where are the sheep?
The sheets?
Sheep.
A sheep? Oh, maybe they didn't have sheep. I do not know. Maybe it was too difficult.
Cows.
I don't know.
When Yaakov...
He took with him sheep, yes. I do not know. Maybe they didn't have, or maybe they couldn't survive.
It doesn't have a lot of actual...
But you can't... Sheep is for eating, but they would be even more important for Kabarn. Okay, but camels, these are really for transport. Donkeys,
commercial
use. Okay. These obviously were significant. I don't know. There's obviously more to it. It is a little bit bizarre to go list the exact numbers. I mean, you know, like someone comes, so they will count how many cars. Okay, they're strange, yeah.
They're talking about animals.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, next pasuk, they switch to animals, then they go back to people.
No, but the people who when it comes to the people, the next pasuk is still telling us they gave donations.
Yeah, they're talking about people.
I don't know if that.
In other words, animals are sort of like artificially inserted in this.
Well, we have, in pasuk Samache, we have the slaves. We have the slaves, Avdehem, Bi'am, Hoisehem. Slaves, but they weren't Jewish, they were slaves. Then we mentioned their possessions. Slaves in ancient times were part of their possessions. So we mentioned all of their possessions, slaves and animals, and now we go back to describing that they, when they arrived, they donated from the personal wealth for the foundation of the Beis HaMikdash, and they're ready to go. Okay, let's see. Pasuk Tes. Kichoicham, according to their ability, according to their strength, but here in this context, it's going to their wealth, according to their means. Means, their financial means, nasnu, they gave la'itzar hamalacha, to the treasure house of malacha, they gave donations, they gave zahav, gold, dar kimoinim. Now what is dar kimoinim? It's a certain type of coin. That's a kurai. It's a certain type of coin.
Over here, very good.
A Greek coin.
A Greek coin?
Until today.
Okay, very good. So here you have it.
Rashi says,
Shei matbea shel zahav. A coin, it's a certain type of coin. How much? Shei shribos v'elef, 601,000. Okay, so ribo is 10,000. So we have, I'm sorry, 61,000. I'm what I'm saying. Shei shribo, 60,000. Ribo is 10,000 times 6, v'elef 1,000, so 61,000. V'chesef and silver, monim are kalim. These are, well, so weight. V'chesef and silver, monim are weight. Chameshes, 5,000. A lot more, it's interesting that they gave a lot more gold than they gave silver. Normally we have all these different accountings, we have much more silver than we have gold. But here we have 61,000 coins of dar kimoinim, coins of gold, and silver monim, it's a weight of silver, chamesha salafim, maybe the amount of this the weight, I'm not sure the weight, the literal, maybe the weight is a lot more in volume than the amount of the coins, but whatever it is, there are 5,000 silver monim weights of silver, the chosnois koyhanim mea, and tunics of koyhanim 100, the koyhanim would need to do the avoida, and they would need to wear leather, linen, they have to be perfect for linen, and obviously linen was very expensive, and this was donated, exactly 100. Okay, and Rashi says the kostness was lisharesfem, was in order to be used for the service. Okay, let's pasuk ayin. Vayeshu hakoyhanim v'halavim umin ha'am. They resettled. They settled the land. The koyhanim v'halavim umin ha'am, only from some of the people, because obviously a very small percentage returned. Only 42,360. So from the am which have returned, v'hamishoyrim, and the singers. These are the levim. V'hashoyarim, and the gatekeepers. V'hanesinim, and the nesinim, be'arehem, in their cities, v'chol Yisrael be'arehem, and all of the other Jewish people, they return back to their cities. Let's see in the Mitzudas Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk Ayin, b'na'am, b'nei Yehuda b'nyamin, the Am refers to b'nyamin, be'arehem, ashohayu arei nachalosim ad shloigalu. So what does it mean in their cities? In their cities that they lived in before they were exiled. They returned exactly to their old hometown. V'chol Yisrael, over here, according to the Mitzudas, when it says v'chol Yisrael, this refers to the return of some of the Aseres HaShvatim. A very significant point, because the Aseres HaShvatim were exiled more than 125 years before the Churban Bayis. And now with these 52 years, it's been 175 years for these people, and yet they still held on to their Jewish identity all over the world, wherever they were, and a significant portion, we learned 13,000 of them approximately, made their way back to return, and they went home. And they came back to their cities. Now we go to Perigimel. Now they returned. It's not exactly clear at what point in time they returned. They went up during the spring and summer. You cannot travel in the winter, and the winter is extremely dangerous. So when Koresh gave permission 52 years after the Churban Bayis, they were now returning in the springtime, the summertime. The summer probably is also very difficult. It's extremely hot. You need water, and especially that part of the world, it can be extremely dangerous. But so it's not exactly clear at what point in time, but they did travel not during the winter. So it's a very limited time. Springtime wars in ancient times were Pesach time. Yeah, so that means they would have to wait all the way.
They say you don't fight in Afghanistan,
right? Exactly. You always hear in the news that there are very limited windows of time when it's ideal to go to war, because soldiers cannot take the extreme 120 degree heat of the desert, and the winter time is not exactly sandstorms and all these other types of things. So it's not clear. I do not know, but it's not clear exactly what point in time they actually made the aliyah. But whenever they made the aliyah, they waited. They arrived, they settled the land, and they waited until the seventh month, which means until Rosh Hashanah, the Chodesh HaShvi'i, the seventh month. We learned yesterday about Zion. All of the Zions are Chaviv, and one of the Zions of the Chaviv is the Chodesh HaShvi'i, the seventh month. And at this point in time, they already had settled. They had enough time to settle in their cities. They all gathered. What a pella. One group. Everyone put aside their differences, their minhagim, all of their religious beliefs, and they all came to gather ki'ish echad. How many times in Jewish ki'ish echad b'lev echad? It's very significant at this point. How many times in Jewish history do you have this idea? They were ki'ish echad. Everyone was united with one role in Yerushalayim. Rashi va'yiga kumo v'higia ha'chodesh ha'shvi hu ha'chodesh tishrei v'nei yishol. It's chodesh tishrei. Don't make a mistake and think that we're dealing with tishrei.
What line are you reading now?
I'm reading the Rashi pasuk aleph chodesh tishrei, because don't think that since one may have been misled to believe that now that the bais was choraf, they started counting the months differently. Because we know with the kings, the non-Jewish kings, there was always different ways of counting months throughout history, counting the years, counting the months. So when it says here the chodesh hashvi, they maintain the way the Torah calculates the month. The first month is chodesh nisan, memei lechodesh the shvihi is chodesh tishrei of Rosh Hashanah. Uvenei shal Rashi kins uvenei shal asher hayu be'arim me'asu. What did they do at this point in time when it came Rosh Hashanah? Vayi'asu kulam ke'echad li'rushalayim. Okay, pasik beis. Pasuk Beis, and just before we go to Pasuk Beis, let's go to the Mitzvah stuff in Pasuk Aleph. Be'arim hayu bari nachlasam ki shechad ratzolemar chish maher ki bias ishechad. So the Mitzvah puts a little bit of a twist on what it means ki ishechad. See, if you take the Pasuk literally, what you're more inclined to say is they were united. They were united achdos. They all put aside their different ideas. Ki ish echad blei vechad, but that's not what the Mitzudo says. He says ki ish echad means they were quick, they were swift. It's not reflecting an ideology like ki ish echad blei vechad by Matan Torah. Achdos. That's not what it means according to the Mitzudos. He's downgrading the significance of ki ish echad. It means just like one person can travel very quickly. You're not limited by there's no traffic, right? If you go on the road in the middle of the night and there's no traffic, so you can go quickly, so too. They were all swift. Chish maher. Chish means swift. Maher. Two words are the same thing. Kibias ish echad. Very significant point what the Mitzudos is doing, why he does that. Why he does that and does not learn the pasuk simply that there was a very intense degree of achdos. Pasuk beis. Vayokom Yeshua ben Yod Sadok. So here for the first time we have his name, his last name, his father's name, and this is Yehoshua Kohen Gadol. For some reason his name is shortened. And we mentioned this before, it's not clear. We had in the previous Perek Beis, we counted Yeshua, three Yeshua. So it was a very popular name. There was a Yeshua that was Yeshua Kohen Gadol. There was a Yeshua family from the tribes of Yehuda and Binyamin, and there was a Yeshua among the Levian. So we have that name. That name appears throughout all of the various Shvatim. Here we're going back to the most chashiv of the Yeshuas, who was Yehoshua with a hey. For some reason, the hey is taken out. Ben Yod Sadok. He was a Kohen Gadol. The Echav HaKohanim and his brothers, the Kohanim, Uziru Bavel Ben She'altiel. And we mentioned many times that Zeru Bavel, according to some opinions, is Nehemiah of the next Sefer. He was also present. He was a direct descendant of David HaMelech. He was a child. He was a descendant even of Yehoyachin. He was in line of the Malchus. The Echav and his brothers, Vayivnu, and they built Es Mizbach Elokei Yisrael. They built the Mizbeach Lehalois Alav Oilois, to offer upon it Oilois Kakosub Yisrael Moshe Ish Elokim, like it's written in the Chumash, in Chamish Chumash Torah, in Chumash Vayikra, in Chumash Tevarim, like what's written there. Now, what is significant over here is the order. I just want you to keep this in mind. We're going to have later on. At this point in time, they are building just the Mizbeach. They're not yet up to building the Beis HaMikdash. The building of the Beis HaMikdash will take place later. That was a very elaborate and expensive and complex project to build the Beis HaMikdash. It was also politics, because during these 52 years, the land was desolate, and there were other nations that surrounded Eretz Yisrael who were bitter enemies of the Jews. They had to settle some deals. They were enemies for different reasons. They were enemies. Some of them were enemies just outright hatred because of jealousy of this inborn sinner which comes from Esav. Halacha biyadenu Esav soni es Yaakov. But we have to also understand there were enemies because that throughout the 410 years, Klal Yisrael laid a heavy hand on them to keep them in line. They demanded tribute and taxes, and they now wanted to take revenge. They looked back in their history, and they claimed that the Jews persecuted them, and they made their lives difficult, and they wanted to make trouble for the Jewish people. So to build the Beis HaMikdash was not a simple thing, because the surrounding enemy nations did not want this to happen. Why? They viewed the Beis HaMikdash as a statement that we are a nation apart. They were only willing to tolerate you can temporarily live here as a guest, and we'll let you have a mizbech. You can practice your religion, but don't let this service lead to nation building. Mm-hmm. Don't let this lead to an independent, autonomous state where you will declare your independence. And therefore, there was this very delicate balance not to do anything which should be interpreted as we're here to declare our independence. And we're going to see that will come out very clearly later on. But at this point in time, one of the things that is significant at this point is the order. The order here is they're just, leave us alone, we're just here building a mizbeach, an altar, to offer sacrifices. We're not building a structure. And maybe they set up some curtains for privacy. And that would allow them to offer oilas. Now this is a discussion, a big topic in halacha, the Rambam and the Ravid. I don't know all the details, but if you don't have a bias, a Beis HaMikdash, but you do have a Mizbeach, the Mizbeach has the status as a Bama Gedola. And upon a Bama Gedola, you are permitted to offer oilos, but you're not necessarily permitted to offer chatos. A chatos, and a minochos, and a shamos, all the various karbonos. But oilos, which are complete burnt offerings, are permitted to be offered upon a Bama Gedola. Bama Gedola means that now, in order to build the Mizbeach, they had to know the precise location of the Mizbeach. And Chazal come enter at this point in time, this is the Gemara, and tell us this was one of the main contributions of the three Nevi'im of the time, Chagai, Zechariah, Umalachi. The Gemara says that Chagai, one doesn't say which one did which, we could probably assume it's in order, one of them told them the location of the Mizbeach. You just can't build the Bama Gedola anywhere you want. L'shichnoi sidrashu uvasashama. You need a prophet to tell you where is a location on this world where Hashem allows you to build a Mizbeach. Now you would say, well, they had the Bayis Rishon, right? The Bayis Rishon was established by David, by Shlomo. They knew, al pi ruach HaKodesh, through the prophets, where the location was. But we have to also remember that it was destroyed. The Bayis Rishon was completely wiped off the map. And even though they may have known the approximate location, they did not know the precise location, the exact location. And they needed to consult with a Navi. It had to, once again, be renewed to tell them exactly where the Mizbeach was and where it can be. That's number one. Number two, the second Navi told them an incredible Chiddush, the dimensions of the Mizbeach. Chazal tell us that the Mizbeach in the time of the Bayis Sheni was 32 Amos by 32 Amos. In the time of the Bayis Rishon it was 28 Amos by 28 Amos. They expanded the size of the Mizbeach. And who says one is allowed to do that? So that was the contribution of another one of the prophets, seemingly Zechariah. It was Chagai, Zechariah, Umalachi. The third Chiddush was that this idea that's expressed in detail by the Rambam and the Ravid, who disagrees with the Rambam at different points, is that you're allowed to offer oilos on the Mizbeach as long as it's built in the proper location, the proper size, even though you have not yet put up the structure. So there were three Chiddushim. The location of the Mizbeach, the size of the Mizbeach, exactly how to rebuild the Mizbeach, and number three, that you're allowed to offer korbanos on the Mizbeach even though you don't yet have the structure. You don't have the walls of the Azara, you don't have the Heichel, you don't have the Kodesh HaKodashim, you don't have anything. Everything is just open space. So they needed the three Nazim to teach them these three halachas, and that's exactly what they did over here. And who are done? This was done through the leadership. Now this, in order for this to take place, there was a need for Jewish leadership. And there are two leaders being mentioned here. Yeshua ben Yotzadok, V'echav HaKohanim, Uzerubavel. Now Zerubbabel is Malchus, that Shevet Yehuda. He would have served, had they merited, he would have served as the new Melech. He was a king without a crown. He was the unofficial king. And Zerubbabel. And Yeshua was the unofficial Kohen Gadol. We're going to see later, after things get a little bit better and things are going well, they then decide they're going to build the base Hamigdash. They're going to go to the next step, take it one step further. And there the names are reversed. There the one that takes the lead is first Zerubbabel, and then comes the Kohen Gadol. Rav Schwab makes this brilliant point. He points to Rav Schwab's Chiddush. The difference, when it comes to the Mizbeach, religious matters, the Kohen Gadol took the lead. When it comes to the Beis Hamikdash, the bias in a focus, one dimension of the bias, it's a political,
it's a national enterprise,
and it represents Klal Yisrael. We, I think, tend today, when we think about the Beis Hamikdash, we think it's purely religious. It's not so.
Right.
That's what Rav Schwab comes to point out. The Beis Hamikdash is a national
center.
This is Eretz Yisrael. This is the focus of the nation of the Klal Yisrael. Forget about religion. Put religion aside. Okay, inside we do religious things. That's the Kohen Gadol. But it's a very interesting diak of the difference of Malchus versus Kohun. There are two forms of leadership in Klal Yisrael. There's the Kohuna and there's the Melech. And you see that here being expressed here with Mizbeach. We're dealing with Kohuna. Later we're going to deal with the bias. That's the role of the Melech. Okay, so the offer over here, they all got together, they built the Mizbech HaKel Yisrael, L'Halos, L'Av Oilos, Chagosim, Sos Moshe, Yisrael Kim, which means that on Rosh Hashanah, Aleph Tishrei, the first month, they offered Korbanos. But on Korbanos, they offer Chatos, you offer Korban Chat, there are many Chatos. No, they did not offer on that first Rosh Hashanah any Korban Chat. The only thing they offered were the Oilos. The Oilos that are offered on the day. Let's see. There is no Rashi, the Mitzudos, it's just one word, Ben Shal Tiel. Ben Beno Hoya. So over here, the Mitzudos points out, the Mitzudos and Pasuk Beis points out that when it says here, Zerubbabel, okay, this is, we have to go into his Yichus, maybe at some point we'll encounter more of his Yichus. His father was not She'al Tiel, that was his grandfather, but it's not uncommon for the Pasuk to trace the Yichus to the grandfather. Okay, now we go to Pasuk, they build the Mizbeach through the three prophets. Okay, the three Nevi'im told them exactly what to do, Haggai, Zechariah, Umalachi, and now we come to Pasuk Gimel, Vayachinu HaMizbeach Al Mechoinos. They established. So first, in Pasuk Beis, it says Vayivnu. They built Es Mizbach. Here, the Pasuk goes further, and it says Vayochinu HaMizbeach Al Michoinoisav. They established. Not just they built it, they did things to protect it. Okay, there's one thing, you build it. Like, you know, they talked to them about Sandy. So now all the buildings, most of the buildings on downtown, they're already back in business after 2 months, some of them. And a great, enormous expense, what had to be done to replace all of the, like, all the electrical work. And now, what's now to talk? What are we going to do now to prevent this from happening another time? What kind of system are we going to put in, some protective type of system? That's what's taking place over here. Vayivnu. They came and they built the Mizbeach. But now we have to protect it. We have to do something over here to make sure that the Goyim, our neighbors, our enemies, are not going to demolish it and make problems. So they started doing things now, Vayachinu. HaMizbeach, they prepared the Mizbeach not just Al Mechoinoisav, upon its foundation, meaning in the greater picture of things to establish it with a greater security. by building at least some curtains around it, or having guards, and having some type of political relations with the neighbors, so they should not get upset. Ki ve'emo aleihem, they were terrified. Me'ameho aratzos, from the nations of the lands, from the goyim, v'ya'alu olav oilos, they offered upon the mizbech oilos offerings, la'ashem, oilos la'bokir, v'la'orev oilos, in the morning and the evening, they offered the carbon tamish al shach and tamish al ben arbaim. Let's see first the mitzudos, and then the rashi. There's a lot of things going on in this pasuk. Gimel ki ve'emo ki va'avur ha'emo va'pachad shohoy alei mi'am ha'aratos miharu b'yin ha'mizbeach. So according to the mitzudos, he's of the opinion, the word va'yachinu ha'mizbeach al mechoy noisav. He's obviously disturbed. How does this relate to the pasuk before va'yivnu? So he explains va'yachinu in this context means not to be taken literally. They were swift. They were very quick to complete the process very soon, because they knew every moment they delay and they stretch it out, there's a chance that the neighbors are going to put an end to it.
Is it possible that that's why earlier he differed with Rashi and he said Ki'isha Khan?
Swiftly. Could be. He's being consistent.
It could be.
He keeps on focusing on the swiftness because of the fear. Could be. Kivavur ho aim of yapacha choy alay meami haratzos, mi haru bebinin amisbech lahakiboy lashem, velishol meamo, meimo, ho ezer be es havos hakabonas. So he's saying also another very deep idea of the mitzvahs. He's saying the reason why they were quick was they wanted the zuchus of the karbonas. Why would they realize by offering karbonas to Hashem that would bring them close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? This is something which is extremely hard for us to understand. How is it that by bringing a karbon, how does this work? You take an animal, you slaughter the animal, you collect its blood, you pour the blood on the Mizbeach, and that somehow brings us close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does slaughtering an animal have to do with coming close to Hashem? But it does. We do not know how this thing works. They were afraid of the enemies, and they offered their korban. They wanted very much, they needed protection. And they felt that by offering their korbanos, that would provide them with great merit, bring them close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem would protect them. So the swiftness was to gain the merits. One more time, these words, a very deep idea. These are one of two ideas of what the fear was. One more time, ki va'avur ha'ema v'apach pasuk gimel in the mitzudos, because of the pasuk gimel in the mitzudos, ki va'avur ha'ema v'apach shoy alei miyami ha'aratzos, because of the fear of the nations, miyaru ha'bimim ha'mizbeach, la'akrivo la'Hashem, v'lish'ol me'imo. And by bringing the korbanos, they'll be able to make a request, gesundheit, from Hashem, me'imo, ho'ezer, assistance, protection from the enemies that surround them, be'ez havos ha'korbanos. And then they brought the oilos laboki, they brought up the tamidim, himatamid, they brought up the tamid shal shachar, and the tamid shal bein, abam, which are tamidim, Rashi, v'yachim v'adam z'vich al-mukhan ha'isof, k'di l'hakiv olav korbanos, sh'ari ho'yu yurei me'ami ha'ratzos, sh'lo yikantrum. They should not complain and provoke them. V'shelo yal shinum, they should not slander the Jewish people to Koresh. L'melech ubanu ha'mitzbech la'alois olav oilos l'man yishmu v'yivinu ha'am. So here Rashi is doing something different, very different than the Mitzvahs. Why do they build the Mitzvah? L'man yishmu v'yivinu ha'amim badavar asher asu al pi ha'melech, that they did this, they're not coming to to demonstrate what they're doing is through the command. They're not coming to build, to make an independent state and make trouble for the other nations. They're just coming here for a religious service with the permission of Koresh, and they're not going to make trouble for the neighbors. They should hold back from complaining, preventing them from building the bais. In other words, according to Rashi, the neighbors were very disturbed. What are you doing here? What's going on? Why are the Jewish people returning here? It must be they want to reestablish a state. And if they'll reestablish a state, they're going to make trouble for us. They're going to conquer the land. They're going to take away our land. They're going to demand from us to pay tax. They're going to conquer us. We don't want this. Get out of here. So they said, no, we're not here to conquer the land. We're not here to make trouble. We're just here for religious reasons. We're just here to settle for religious reasons, not to make trouble. We're just going to be guests in the land, and don't make trouble for us. So in order to show that it's here for religious purposes, not to conquest the land, not to make a state, they were very quick to build the Mizbeach and offer sacrifices to show we're here for religious reasons. Very different than the Mitzudos. These are two different themes in the Mefarshim, which Rashi and Mitzudos. The Mitzudos says, no, the reason why they were so quick to build the Mizbeach, they need Sechusim. We need protection. The neighbors are going to kill us. We need protection. How are we going to get protection? Kapara, atonement. By bringing a kapara, carbon oil law, Hashem will protect us. Rashi, nothing to do with atonement, religious protection from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We want to, it's a political statement. We're here for religious reasons. We're not here to declare our independence and to provoke you. And don't worry, we're not going to make trouble. Let's go to the next pasuk. Pasuk Dalet, Vayasud now, does not say anything about Yom Kippur. That's very interesting. That's very curious. It came the first day of Tishrei. They offered oilos, and Yom Kippur, the Ikar Korbanos of Yom Kippur are Chatos, the Sor LaHashem, the Sor LaHazazel, the power of the Kohen Gadol. All of the major Korbanos of Yom Kippur are Chatos, are sin offerings.
And
they were not set up. So the pasuk completely glosses over Yom Kippur. It was the first day of Rosh Hashanah, so they offered an oila. The Talmud, they resumed the Talmud Shal Shachar, Talmud Shal Ben Arbaim. Yom Kippur knew, came and went. There was nothing they could anyway do for Yom Kippur because they didn't have the Beis Hamikdash, they didn't have the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they didn't have all these things. And now they come to Sukkot. Now Sukkot is something that's very significant because in Sukkot we offer 70 oilois. And the 70 oilos are brought on behalf of Yom Kippur, on Sukkot, going 13 paros, working your way down. And who are the oilos offered? On behalf of who are they offered? On the Umos Ha'olam. So this was a real political statement that we're not here just for us, we're here for you. The Karbonos, the 70 oilos that are offered on Sukkot, are connected to the 70 nations of the world, and we're offering this on behalf of you, therefore don't be upset. They fulfilled the requirements of Chag HaSukkot, the oilos yom biyom, biyom bimispar. Every single day there are a different number of oilos going from 13 parim, working your way down, and there are 7 kavasim, and there are 2 elim. Is that correct? 2 elim and 7 kavasim. The mispar kamishpat, according to the law, dvar yom yomo, as it's written in the Torah every single day. Rashi pasuk dalid v'olos yom biyom b'mispar karbonos achag b'misparam kimishpatom, like it says in the pasuk. Pasuk hey, the achrei chen, afterwards, oilas tamid, they offer the tamid, vile chodoshim, and they offered the carbonos of Rosh Chodesh, ulchol moade Hashem ham kudoshim, all of the holy festivals of Kodesh Baruch Hu, ulchol mitznadev mdavel Hashem, and they offered anyone that gave an oila, a gift of an oila to Hashem, also was not offered. So things were moving along, little by little. First Rosh Hashanah, then Sukkot, they resumed the Talmud on a daily basis, and then they began even to take private offerings, which is a very big chiddush. First, it was only the communal offerings, communal oilos, but now even anyone who wants to offer a private oil can offer private oil, but not a carbon chatos. Because a carbon chatos, you still need to have a complete bias. Pasuk Vav, Miyom Echad L'Chodesh HaShvi Hechelu La'alois Oilos La'Hashem. This all began from the first day of Tishrei, from Rosh Hashanah, but the pasuk makes it clear, v'heichal Hashem lo, you saw the foundation, the actual structure, the bayis, was not yet founded. Even the foundation was not yet laid. The Mizbech was built, but there was no bias. Pasuk Zayin, Vayinu Chesef, they delivered silver, lachitzavim, to quarriers. inquirers of stone, vilechoroshim, and craftsmen of wood, umachol mishteh, they provided them, their pay was not just kesef, they paid for room and board, they paid them also with food, umachol mishteh, food and drink, v'shemen and oil, latsidoinim v'latsoirim, for tzor and Sidon. These were two neighboring, we learned all about this in Sefer Yeshaya, about these two nations which live to the north of Yerushalayim, Tzor and Sidon, two different nations, and Lebanon, correct? They're near Tyre,
Sidon.
So these two nations, Sidonim, Velat Tzorim, Sidon and Tzor, they had master craftsmen. They were experts in the cutting of wood cutting and the quarrying of stone. Luhavi, Atzei, Stone Lohavi Atse Arozim to bring. They also stay in their land is where wood is where the Atse Levan, where the beautiful Arozim, the beautiful cedars would grow. This did not grow in Eretz Yisrael, grew there in their land, so they had to be paid to cut down these trees and to ship them along the Mediterranean down a little bit lower, a little down south to the area near Yerushalayim, and then to carry them from the Mediterranean all the way into Yerushalayim. It was a big trip. Lahavi atzei arozim min halavanon ad el yom yofo. Now yom yofo is an unusual expression. We'll see in Rashi what that means. And this was all done kirishyoin koresh melech paras alehem, which simply means with permission. We'll see the two perushim, authorization, permission. We'll see what this means in a few moments. The lashon rishus, with the permission of koresh melech paras alehem, because at this time in the world, koresh ruled over Tsar and Sidon, and it was his property. And even the people of Tsar and Sidon had no right on their own to cut down this these treasures, these beautiful trees, and give them over to the Jewish people to help them build the Beis HaMikdash. It had to be done with the permission, the authorization of Koresh Melech Paras, and it was given, there was authorization. They provided the documents, and the messengers went forth, and we told these people in Tsar and Sidon that it shall be done, and it was done. Now, there's a lot going on here in this Pasuk example. Let's see over here, first the Mitzvot and Rashi. Let's see Pasuk, let's see the Mitzvot. And Pasuk Zayin, Lachaitzvim, Hema, Karsa, Avonim, Mokam, Machatzavim, these people who cut out this, they quarry the stones, Vilachoroshim, the craftsmen, Hema, Ha'umnim, these are the craftsmen, Boini Hakir, who build walls, Latzidonim, Vilatzorim, Kiyoidim, Hema, Lichvaisoitim, they are experts. Kimash Omar, Bin Shlomo, nothing has changed in 500 years. 500 years, nothing has changed. They always had the expertise in quarrying stones and in cutting wood. El Yam. Now, what does this mean over here? El Yam Yafo Lehashitam Alehem V'Lavo Liushlaim. So Yafo means to, simply means, it's not translating the word, it means to bring. It means
the port city.
Okay, so it doesn't say that. Yafo means like Yavo. Sometimes a pay and a base. See, we had that sometimes. A pay and a base sometimes are interchangeable. That's generally true when it comes to a targum, like Barzel, Parzela. Okay, we have there, I don't remember all the examples. So here, in fact, we mentioned that inside a pay in the Sefer Torah, there is an invisible base. In Ksav Ashuris, when you look on the inside of the page, you see the white part is an invisible base. So here it can be interpreted, El Yom Yavo. It, which is an expression, Yavo means to bring. It was brought via the Mediterranean. The Yom in this context means the Mediterranean, because Sidon and Tsar are along
coastal
cities. They cut down, they ship it down the Mediterranean, and through the Yom, Yavo, it would come into port city, come into a port city lower down near Yerushalayim, and they would be transported by wagon to Yerushalayim for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Yavo means to bring, right? So we're interpreting the word Yavo. It's a difficult word. We're interpreting here in this context to mean to mean yavo, to bring. Okay, let me just see in pasuk. Rashi, just jump down to Rashi for one moment. Okay, look at Rashi says exactly this idea in pasuk Zayin. Just to jump down, I'm going to go back with the other Rashi in a moment. El yom yafo derech hayom hayu meviim oisam. So Rashi interprets the word yafo also as the word yavo, as a base. So what do you want to say?
Yafo is already known as a port city.
Okay.
As in Yonah.
Yeah.
Earlier.
Is that near Yerushalayim?
No, but it's
the nearest port city. Okay, fine. Okay, that's another interpretation. Fine. I did not look deeply into the Mefarshim, but that's another idea. Okay, but the way Rashi appears to be translating the word is Yafo Derech Hayom Hayu Meviim Osam. He's taking the word Yafo and he's translating as the word Yavo. And that's not far-fetched because a pay and a base often are interchangeable.
I understand that. But maybe it's because I don't know exactly in Yonah whether it's spelled without an Aleph. Maybe
it's
that's what it
is. Spelled with a Yud Fei Vav.
Right. So maybe it's the Aleph in this.
It could have a dual meaning. It could allude, it was brought through the Mediterranean to Yafo. Yafo, it has a dual meaning. Okay, but it's an interesting idea, and that's how it's spelled. Okay, now let's see. Let's run through over here the Mitzudas and Rashi, and then we'll stop. There are a few interesting points over here. In the Mitzudas, let's see. One more time. Zayin, pasuk Zayin in the Mitzudas. Lachaitzim, we did that. Lacharoshim hamavoyimnim, latzidanim v'latzarim, we did that. El yamifol lahashitam alav lover liushlam kirishyoin. Okay, that's an important word. What does it mean, kirishyoin? He translates it here via kirishus. Okay, it's an unusual word. Permission. Kirish ashohoy aleim livnos sabayis. He granted permission to build a beis hamikdash. Let's see, and you look at the mitzudos tzioin. Also, he says humiloshin rishus. Hayidua bid rabasen zichron levracha. Now let's see some of the Rashi's. Rashi, let's go back to pasuk. Dalit. Let's just run to pasuk Dalit. Ve'oilos yoyim b'yoyim b'mispar karbonas achak b'mispar b'midedek k'mishpatam pasuk Hey. The acher echein will yacher hasukos hoyu makrivim karbonos b'chol yom laboker v'lerv. After sukos, they offer karbonos every single day. So according to Rashi, it appears that the repetition of the reason why it says tamid twice, they only offer the tamid on Rosh Hashanah. From Rashi, it's mashma they offered the tamid on Rosh Hashanah, and they offer the oilos of the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. That's all they... Then the Tamid are oilos. Then they took a break. Nothing was done on the second day of Tishrei, and the third day, and the fourth day, until Sukkos. There was a 14-day break, it would appear from Rashi. They did not even offer the Tamid Shel Shachar and the Tamid Shel Ben Harbayim. Then on Sukkos, they resumed by offering all of the oilos, the 70 oilos for the 8 days of Sukkos, or the 7 days of Sukkos, and then together with resuming by bringing the oilers of the Musafim, they also offered the Tamid Shel Shachar and the Tamid Shel Ben Abayim, and that did not stop. Once they resumed on the 15th day, they continued all the way through from there on, all the way through. And that's why the Pasuk repeats this idea of the oilers. Because if you look back, it's a little bit strange. You look back where they begin bringing the Korbanos, and Pasuk Gimel, it says, Vayalu olav oilos lahashem. Oilos laboiker vilo oref. Then, when we go to Sukkis, it goes in pasuk Hey, v'achri chayin oilas tamid. Then in pasuk Dal, v'yasu eschak hasukos kakosu v'oilas yom yomo b'mispar k'mishpat dvar yom yomo v'achri chayin oilas tamid. But didn't they already do that starting with Rosh Hashanah? They already started. That's what it said. It says in pasuk Gimel. So the answer is no. There was a break. It was a one-time shot, one-time deal. On the first day of Tishrei, they offered the oilos of Rosh Hashanah, and they offered the Tamid Shel Shachar and Tamid Shel Ben Abayim. That was it. They stopped because they were not ready. They were not fully They were not fully prepared. So they had to take a 15 to 14 day break until Sukkot. On Sukkot, they now offered the Musafim, the Oilas of the Musafim, and now they began to offer on a daily basis the Oilas Tamid Vile Chodashim Ulchol Mode Hashem Ham Kudashim Ulchol Mistadev, and then often, in addition, they offered private korbanos. So let's go to Rashi. Back to Rashi Vile Chodashim. ולראש החדשים, היו מקריבים קורבנות של ראש החדשים, ולכל מודי השם, ולשאר מוידוס, קורבניהם, every single mode, they offer the מוסף of the מויד, ולכל מסנדב, ולכל עושים המסנדבים, I'm in Rashi, פסק ה' the end, ולכל עושים המסנדבים, נדבויסיהם, מן היו מקבלים הכהנים עושים להקריבם, ומיום אחד בתשרי, הסחילו להקריב קורבנות, ועדיין לא נבנה יסוד הבית. All of this began. All of this, the process began. The details are not clear, but the process all began on the first day of Tishrei. First day Tishrei, then we mentioned Sukkot, and from Sukkot and onward, Rosh Chodesh, private korbanos, and the Tamid Shel Shach and the Tamid Shel Bein Harboim. Pasuk Zayin, Lat Sidonim v'lat Soirim, b'nei Tzor v'tzidon. Okay, they're all over Tanakh, especially in the Nevi'im Acharonim, in Yeshaya, and in Yechezkel and Yirmiyah and in the Treyasar, all of the prophets are predicting for them gloom and doom. What's going to happen to them in all the various times of history? So b'nei tzar v'tzidoyim shayu umnim livnoy sabayis el yam yafo derech hayam, through the Mediterranean hayu meviim, or some they would transport the wood and the cedars. Now here we come to this very difficult word, Kirishyoin. So the Mitsudos translated as with the permission. According to the permission of the king to build a bayis, Kirishyoin Lashoin Rishus Megizras Rosh. Now he goes into this long, long parish, which we're not going to go through because I don't know.
Can I suggest something here?
Yeah.
Rishyon, I think Rashi is saying, as opposed to Rishus, means Rishus Hamel, it means official permission.
Okay.
Not just plain permission, but official.
Okay, official Kirishyoin permission of Koresh Melchas. Now we go through a long discussion, proving that the word Kirishyoin means Rishus, because you're missing the most important letter, the Saf. The Saf is missing. Rishus. Where is the Saf? So he proves that the Shoresh of the word is only two letters. It's really just Resh and Shin. And you can manipulate the word in different ways. And that's why even though it's only the Reshin is the real Shoresh of the word Rishus. And in this context, it means permission. And he provides a whole long list of examples. Lushan Rishus, Megizras, Risha, Shereimin, Ova Yomar Evyoin, Umin Savo Yomar Tsevyoin, Umin Chazei Chizyoin, Umin Ra'or Rayoin, Umin Chiba Chivyoin, Umin Rasha Yomar Rishus, Kumoy Min Ana Anois, Umin Shavah Shavus, Umin Ra'or Ra'os, Umin Zina Zinus, Nimsu Rishus, Virishyoin Boin, Vyoitz, Megizera Achas, from one root. Okay. Lufishar Hadikdok, period. The Loshan Acher, another interpretation. And it's all the same. The word Rishus and Rishyoin is one and the same, as he has proven. Umenachem Chibroi. Menachem was one of Rashi's contemporaries, a little bit earlier than Rashi. He wrote a sefer called the Machberes. That was the name of his sefer. Loshon Areshes Sefoseinu. A whole different word. It means the utterance of lips. The utterance. The word Rishon does not mean permission. It means the utterance. Now in this context, it will mean permission. But it means Kirishyoin Koresh Melech Paras Lehem, like the utterance of his lips. What he said. The king Koresh gave a command that the Beis HaMikdash should be built, and the wood from Tzor and Sidon shall provide craftsmen and material for its building. Lashoin Areshes Sifaseinu, may the utterance of our lips, we say this on Rosh Hashanah, V'loy Dikdik Bigzeiros. So Rashi says, I do not agree with Menachem.
He doesn't give examples the way Rashi does.
I don't like it. V'aval Pichein, even though he says this, the truth is, Rashi says, practically speaking, it means the same thing. Shnei ponim halalu kroivim ze leze b'mashm usam. Both of these in translations, whether it means the utterance or whether it means permission, it really means the same thing as far as we are concerned. But we should be aware that they're not exactly the same thing. Okay, the first pick up upon this is that if you want to learn like Rashi, it means it has a connotation of being something very official. See this today in current events, United States and Palestinians. It was a UN resolution. It's as official as it gets. It was documented. It was recorded. The documents were handed over to the king of Tsar and Sidon. I want you signed. Everything is legal. I want you to do the following thing. According to Menachem, Koresh didn't want to make it official. He did not want to antagonize the neighbors of the Jewish, of the neighbors of Klal Yisrael. What do I have to go antagonize them for? If I'll make an official UN resolution and everyone will have to vote, I'll make enemies. So we'll do it unofficially. Just say Koresh said this is what you should do. You have someone who'll give a wink with his eye, or I'll have someone there come and just convince the people of Tsar and Sidon that it's in your best interest. It was the utterance of the lips, but it wasn't put in writing. And if Koresh will take heat, how could you let them do this? Well, I never signed a document. I said it. I just said something. It was taken out of context. He allowed himself some wiggle room in order to play politics with neighboring states of Yerushalayim. So it's interesting. You have Rashi and Menachem. Different translations of the word. Seemingly it seems to be the same thing. This is a very big thing. We see this today. Okay, you look, there are many examples today with things that are done officially, and there are things that are done unofficially. And you see if you can get away with it. And if you can get away with it, good. And if it doesn't go well, I never really gave permission. I just, you're able to wiggle out of it. Correct?
No. It says, by gum, the myth of landlord.
Where does it say that?
It says that in the Pasuk Rishon, Ephod Ephod, Alpha Aleph.
Where are you reading from? The very first pasuk of Ezra. That was a command to give the Jewish people money. To give them money that they can go to Eretz Yisrael. But to build the Beis HaMikdash and to transport the cedars of Tsar and Sidon, that's a whole different league.
What were they afraid of?
They'll be killed.
Of what? They went to a land that was desolate.
Yeah.
They went back to the same place where they lived, and if there were they wouldn't have fought with them.
Halacha biyadeinu Esav Soine Yaakov. They hate us. They don't want the Jews there. They just do not want them. Okay, so I just want to emphasize this last point, Kirishion. It seems like a very innocent word, but it's a very great difference of opinion taking place here between Rashi and Menachem, which has great significance. Rishon still means with permission, but there are two different types of permission. There is permission that's official, it's in writing, and there's a permission that's given through oral permission. Areshes sifosim, the utterance of the lips. If it's only he said, you said, then you're able, it's not with the same intensification. There is always a wiggle room. But if you learn Risha means written permission, then it's much more official and it's much more substantial. Okay, we'll stop here.